I'm Dana Duran, Executive Director of the Professional Logging Contractors of Maine. I'm one of the smaller lobbyists in the State House, so I try to take a low profile. But I represent we're a trade association that represents logging contractors throughout the state. Obviously, with respect to the folks that we represent, we really take great pride in representing rural Maine. We have about 200 members throughout the state of Maine. Our members employ upwards of about 2,500 people directly. And again, those folks are employed in rural Maine and represent kind of the backbone of the Maine forest products industry. I've given you three pieces of information. One is just general boilerplate information on our organization, the blue sheet. The second piece is a logging economic impact study that we completed in 2015, which represents kind of what logging means to the Maine economy as of 2014. So you can refer to that when you have a moment. But all told, this is the first study that's ever been done that we know of in the United States on a state level to kind of get down to the bare bones of what logging and trucking mean to the state of Maine. All told, in the state of Maine, about 4,600 people are employed directly, and another 2,700 jobs are indirectly connected. Now, you might ask, why would we be in front of this committee? We represent what I say is the ancillary beneficiaries of the manufacturers and companies who use the products that we harvest. We also represent the collateral damage of those very same companies. And as the industry has ebbed and flowed, more ebb than flow in the last 2 years, certainly we have a lot to gain and a lot to lose with respect to what happens with Maine manufacturing and the utilization of the products that we harvest. So that's why we're in front of this committee. I'll reference three primary pieces that we've been involved with recently with folks that have been on this committee in the past or members of the legislature who are part of this committee or obviously will be in front of this committee this year. The first is the biomass bill that was passed in the last session, which we're very thankful to this committee, Senator Woodsum, and others who were on this and members of the legislature who moved this forward last year. You may have seen a story that was in the Bangor Daily News last Friday because the PUC has awarded the funding to two specific companies, and it hired a firm from London that performed an economic analysis. The great news that came out of that study, I think, is this. For every dollar of investment by the state of Maine, there's almost a $19 return on investment. So for $13.4 million of state revenue that went towards those subsidies directly, almost $300 million of benefit will come to the state of Maine as a result. And from our eyes, that's keeping over 200 loggers and truckers in business, and that keeps a major component of the Maine forest products industry whole and moving. And I think that's an example of good public policy from our perspective. So we're thankful for that. The second piece is the Biomass Commission met this past fall. There were several members of our organization involved in that committee. Several members of this committee here were also involved at various components. And we feel like that the report that came out of that commission represents really what industry needs and wants to grow markets, not only to sustain what we have, but to grow it in the future. And that's what we're most concerned with. So those recommendations are coming before this committee, along with the Agriculture, Conservation, Forestry Committee. At some point, I don't want to get ahead of myself because that commission report is being presented to this committee on February 7th. So those recommendations will be coming forward. The third piece that I just want to mention and is also in the packet that I gave you is you maybe have heard recently or throughout the fall about an economic development assessment team that came to the state per the recommendation of our federal delegation, our congressional delegation. We were very involved in that. We'll be very involved in that going forward. Those recommendations that came directly from industry are going to be presented to this committee also on February 7th next week. So, again, I don't want to get ahead of myself. But in what I've provided you are the industry-led recommendations that are a key component of that economic development assessment team. And one of them specifically, if you look in that two-pager that I gave you, is directly applicable to biomass and combined heat and power. So there's a lot of work going on, obviously, both at the state level and nationally with respect to what we do with biomass, how we grow these markets, how we encourage combined heat and powers, combined heat and power plants, et cetera. And we are very supportive of that and also very involved in that. Lastly, connected to that, Oak Ridge National Lab was here last week at the University of Maine and signed an agreement with the University of Maine. I had an opportunity as part of the EDAC group to go to Oak Ridge in December and see the work they're doing on combined heat and power and biomass. So I guess the point is there's a lot of activity right now with how we grow markets, and I think relationships like that are going to be key to that development. So thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today, and I'll be quiet and answer any questions that you have.
The numbers here for the are from 2014, right?
Yep.
And since then, basically, we've seen Millinocket, Bucksport, Lincoln, and now Jay with and a couple others with drastic reductions in the amount of fiber that they're procuring. And the earlier there was an individual of the pellet industry, and that because of the dropping in fuel right now, there's kind of a stagnating there, and our ability to ship pellets to Europe is somewhat limited, if I remember correctly, because of the infrastructure to get it to the coast.
Yep.
And then there's, and this is all coming together. This in spruce budworm is cyclically and on a cyclical cycle, becoming back again again. So there's the thought that there needs to be this kind of this overcutting, or you basically use it or lose it kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, do we have any idea what that's going to do to, you know, the prices that are, in other words, if your demand just is overwhelmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a couple of my logging friends are already seeing like a collapse in prices to some of these mills.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that affecting your industry?
It's been a significant impact. All the points you mentioned, I mean, you go back 24 months, we've lost 5 pulp and paper mills. We saw in the winter of 2015-16, all 4 of the pellet mills shut down because of the fossil fuel reduction and the warm temperatures. And then we saw the 2 Covanta facilities go down. Those are the 2 biomass electric facilities go down, but now have been restarted in many respects because of that biomass bill that the state passed. But the oversupply has absolutely reduced pricing. And that's concerning because it's market driven. I mean, if you've got too much wood in the marketplace, just like any commodity, if you've got too much supply, it's going to influence, obviously, the demand, and it's going to decrease those prices. And the way we're looking at it is whether it's state policy, federal policy, whatever can be done at this point to influence markets, that's what we're most involved with. And that means sustaining the markets we have and then growing future markets. And that's, I think, from our perspective, why we're watching all of this and playing such a strong role in all of it. But to your direct question about pricing, it's impacting contractors. They have laid off people, may lay off more. And I think this spring, I mean, we don't know how good this winter is going to be because there's so much wood on the market. So many contractors may be cut short. And instead of hanging it up at the end of March, they may be done by the end of February. And that's where we don't know at this point. There's a lot of unknowns.
And just a reminder to the whole committee and the listening public as well, as Mr. Duran mentioned, we will be revisiting this topic much more broadly and much more in depth as well on February 7th when we hear the 2 biomass reports. So we'll have members of the commission present. Mr. Duran will be present. So we'll have an opportunity to really dig in on and have a deep dive with hopefully more of us present on this issue. Further questions?
Just follow up.
Yep. Go ahead.
It's kind of been my understanding, too, that I worked at Verso Paper for a number of years and have some background in this, but that Maine not an exact percentage, but we basically historically have cut almost 50% of our wood from like the fall through to the spring, because they can get at a lot of places over frozen ground that they can't, and that's kind of the way it's been. It's changed over with mechanization.
Mm-hmm.
So should we be, because if that percentage is somewhat accurate, right, are we going to be able to see what this market is doing by this spring a little bit? You mentioned a little bit February. Are we already seeing the ramifications of that?
We're already seeing the ramifications. I mean, there are some mills, and I won't name names, but there's some mills that had all the wood they needed until July 1st on the ground in November of last year. So we're in the midst of it. you know, some of the products that aren't in demand. I mean, you look at the saw log market, absolutely in demand right now. You can't get enough to feed building construction, lumber, flooring, etc. That has not changed. That's increasing in demand. It's really the low value wood side that is most concerning and is really raised all these flags.
You mentioned the fact that we've had several companies go out of business and for all different reasons, but also have the success story of Linklater. I mean, can you maybe just give some folks a little background on that and how that has really changed?
Yep, I'd be happy to. So, Senator Whitsum, appreciate the question. Senator Whitsum is referring to the Linklater family in Athens, Maine. Bob Linklater is one of our board members, but he and his family started out really as sawmill owners back in the 1980s and 1990s in a small community north of Skowhegan. And they have evolved over time. They added a logging operation in the 1980s. They're major landowners. They own close to 100,000 acres. And then in 2007, they started a pellet mill in Athens. So now they've really created their own vertically integrated family-based company. So they harvest wood from their own timberland. They use that wood not only within their own pellet mill, but now they have just fired up and commissioned a combined heat and power plant in Athens. It's one of a kind. It's really the only one in the United States that is utilizing oil instead of water in the refractory of the boiler. And so now they are a self-contained energy unit. They are able to produce their own power. They also produce their own heat that's able to be utilized in the drying of their product. And then any excess electricity goes out to the grid. So they've become their own energy island as a manufacturer. I think they're an absolutely terrific model of what can be done in the state of Maine to utilize every component of a tree for value-added manufacturing, logging, landowning, and now power. So if this committee has a chance to go visit them, I know the Biomass Commission went up and took a tour. I'd be happy to introduce you all to the Linklater family. But that's an example of what's possible in this state, I think, to create our own energy island and keep our money flowing in the state of Maine instead of sending it out.
Good to have a ray of sunshine in that conversation. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.